brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys. It's sipping time.
Oh, yes, it is definitely sipping time here on Sip, Suds, and Smokes. Welcome to this Sips episode where everything good in life is worth discussing. We are the best thing on at 2 a.m., and we thank you for choosing to listen to us instead of the following choice: The Secret Life of Welsh Food, with a fabulous discussion of milk bars in the 1960s. Now, how or why this is a secret or entertaining is a complete mystery to me. So, but then again, our own program is just about as crazy as well. So anyway, if you get bored of this, check out the Welsh Food on the BBC. I'm Good Old Boy Mike, and joining me here is Good Old Gal Carrie Ann.
Good afternoon. I think it is 2020.
Is that a question mark? Maybe she's not really quite sure. Go Boy Sparky is joining us.
Today I found out that sunlight burns my flesh.
Okay. Is what on the Welsh food program?
I think so.
They are pasty.
Yeah, lots.
Yeah, that's true. I was about to say. There's
are we
going to
get banned in Wales now?
Absolutely. That is our goal always.
Once again.
Yes, of course. New to the program is Good Old Boy Craig.
Hello there.
Our sip segments are all about wine, distilled spirits, tea, and coffee. On this episode, we're going to be visiting some gin. Now, we've done some dozen gin that we've tasted in a double-blind tasting today, meaning that we didn't know what we were tasting at all, and then we selected our top five plus our bottom choice for discussion today.
I'm double-blind.
Yeah, Craig's going to tell us what we've gone through and berated our palates with.
Yes, we berated our palates for sure. It is early in the day, or actually 2 a.m. What am I saying? first one we have was Saint Laurent from Quebec. We had Grey Whale from California, Nika Coffee Grain from Japan, Junipero from California, Number 3 from Holland and London, Castle and Key from Kentucky, Freeland from Oregon, Todd and Vixen from I have no idea where, Mahone from Spain, McQueen and the Velvet Vogue from I have no idea where, Kenobi.
Brazil,
right, okay. The bastion of good gin, Brazil. Kenobi from Japan, Bulrush from South Carolina, which again, gin famous right there. And then Freeland Dry. So there's two Freelands, one Navy Strength London Dry and one New World Gin.
Well, that is a real strong flight that we've gone through. Now, again, we're not going through all of those gins today. We've selected our top five out of those 13 different gins, and we're going to go through our top five. Plus, we're going to talk about our bottom choice here as well. Sparky gets the honors of going over our sips ratings for today. Now, do you think you can actually pull off a Welsh accent in search of a milk bar?
Well, I was going to say I haven't been to a milk bar in a minute, not intentionally at least, but I'll do my damnedest.
I don't know what you said. It's utterly ridiculous.
I'm sorry.
Don't miss that pun. I don't know. It's a good pun.
I mean, to be fair, since we've never been to a milk bar, maybe there is something to it.
I just think of a Clockwork Orange. I mean, to me, that's instantly summons when you say a milk bar. But
I think someone has an Oedipus complex.
Oedipal complex, maybe. I'll give it a try, Mike. I'll do my best.
We'll be tasting and discussing these gins and rating them with these sips ratings plus our signature sounds. Hear those ratings now. Number 1. Give me a glass of water to wash out my mouth.
Ooh, that's not too bad. That's offensive, but not horribly offensive. Bring
water! 2. Nice, but what else have you got?
Well, isn't that nice?
3. Interesting. What was this again?
Interesting.
All I can think of is,
it's wonderful, Dennis. There's some lovely filth down here.
4. Let's keep this secret to ourselves. Pour me another.
That's classified.
5. Oh my, I was unaware a thing could be this good.
Oh my goodness!
Yes! 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 Yes!
So.
Yeah.
Like Mike mentioned, this episode is a blind tasting, and this is not even close to our first blind tasting of gin. Be sure to go back and check out our Gin 101 episode to learn all about gin production and our big gin taste-off. We conducted a blind tasting of over 500 gins, not in one day.
Never.
However,
ever.
Never again.
Never ever.
Not going back to that.
Hashtag never again.
Never again.
So many of the gins we tasted for this episode were released after we did the big gin episode, or they weren't widely distributed yet. So we decided to go back and do it again, but not really again. So there were some really interesting flavor profiles trending. We had a couple of gins today, the Grey Whale and St. Laurent, that were under the influence of the ocean. So some seaweed and briny action going on with those. And very if you're different. Looking for something very different, I definitely suggest to try them. They didn't make our top 5, but they're really cool.
So Carrie and I, we're actually sampling, you know, both of these gins that we just talked about, the Grey Whale and the St. Laurent. And, you know, the Grey Whale was not my favorite thing, neat.
It was not mine either, but I did go home and make a gimlet with it, and I thought that really brought out some of those flavors in a different way.
Yeah.
Mike was suggesting maybe trim that with a little salt on the rim. I did not try that, but...
Well, and I like what Craig said earlier is that, you know, even though we've talked about the ranking of this flight, every gin can fit something, right?
Right. I think it's funny because you just said the Grey Whale, which I had never had before today. But to me, it had zero nose whatsoever. And it was very, very watery. I don't know what the proof is on that, but I think you're right on a gimlet because you're not getting much from it. You're not going to, it's not going to stand up. Certainly not going to stand up in with citrus. So, you know, you're going to have the flavors of everything else and it'll provide the backbone of the spirit, but it's not going to give you any flavor.
Yeah, there were definitely some things in each of those products that, you know, I don't know that your palate is always acclimated, you know, to recognize what does seaweed taste like, you know, in gin. And, you know, it's like, I'm not quite sure about
But we've
that.
All had whale in gin. I mean, that's just...
Right.
We've yeah. been we've
Whale
been
is delicious.
We've been there.
But the thing that I read within this flight was there was a wide variety of things going on. And that's what I really enjoyed about each of these particular products that we selected for this show. And I'm excited to talk about our top 5. So we're going to go through these from 5 to our top pick for the day. So you got to hang around to the end to find out, you know, what was our favorite thing today. So our number 5 pick today was from Todd and Vixen. And let me get to that information about that particular product, and I will tell you all about it, and we'll be looking up our tasting notes while we're doing this. So Todd and Vixen, here's some information directly from them. How our products are consumed is as important as how they're made. So we recruited a team of revered cocktail professionals led by Gary Goss Regan, including Leo Rabeshek. I probably just screwed that up. Sorry about it. And Jeffrey Morgenthaler. Early on, and paired them with our British master distiller to help us develop a gin. The result is one lively mix of British sensibility and American mischief. What does that sound like, do you think, Jason? What would British sensibility even sound like in American mischief? That'd be like tossing whiskey down after a cup of ketchup on your fries, right?
I'm sorry, when it comes to American sensibility and gin, all I can think of is a bathtub.
I'm just thinking they're going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think we have introduced...
They don't compliment each other.
No, I think we introduced bathtubs to the gin-making process.
At this time in history, American and sensibilities, those words should never be together.
I agree.
That's true.
Whoever wrote this marketing stuff right. did not call us.
They didn't see 2020.
We were not in the room when it happened.
That's true.
So... Specifically designed to enhance the flavors of gin cocktails, our inaugural Todd and Vixen's Dry Gin 1651 is made by macerating botanicals, including juniper, angelica root, and rooibos tea, to extract their flavors, then non-shell filtering to retain their unearthed profile. The resulting sip is a bold on the entry, giving way to a well-balanced, vibrant gin and a weighty mouthfeel. As the esteemed Gaz Regan put it, this gin rocks. So what do you guys think about this gin?
I don't like this gin.
I liked it too, and it's really, I mean, to me it tasted closer to a classic British dry gin. I don't know about the American mischief part, but I will say that the last time I hand macerated something too much, I almost went blind. And so I respect the level of care that they use.
Did you not use Sipsuds and Smoke personal lube for that? I'm really disappointed.
There's been so many shortages. There's shortages this year. Mike, I need some help there, buddy.
To me, this is
a hotter Ford's gin. It's a more viscous. Mm-hmm. It's obviously meant for cocktails. To me, if you blinded this next to Ford's, I'd be surprised if we picked this over Ford's, because to me, it's essentially the same thing with more heat.
Hotter.
Yeah. Here in my own tasting notes, I wrote it started sweet, had a juniper kind of in the middle. This big pepper finish, was really something that was very notable about this. But yeah, I'm not so sure that I'd be a fan of this neat. This is definitely something I can see working in a lot of great cocktails.
I have 60 gins at my bar and I don't drink gin neat. So
Yeah. No, and I agreed with you, Mike. That sweet was the first thing that I wrote on it, and then astringent finish. So really,
it's 48%. So yeah, you know.
Well, what's what you need in the Navy, right?
I think my strongest tasting note was fresh. I get a lot of really fresh.
And so clean,
bright,
clean.
Fresh, and so clean, clean. Mm. Yeah, but bright flavors. I think it was a really nice. See that.
Well, our sips rating here for the Todd and Vixen 1651 is going to be a 3.
Interesting.
And I know this is lame, but like the label would be something my wife would go for instantaneously. It's got a cute label, I think.
Hey, we'll be right back in a moment.
Rolling clouds and crashing surf, iridescent dunes reflecting by the light of a rising glowing moon. Seashore mesmerizing, night breeze hypnotizing, we've come across these back roads none too soon. Look to the left, to the right, keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love.
Hey, welcome back to your Sip, Suds, and Smokes. On today's episode, it's a gin flight. All neat. We've gone through 13 gins, selected our top five as well as our bottom to talk about. We just finished talking about our number five, which was Todd and Vixens. Again, we rated that a 3 out of 5.
Interesting.
Up next is going to be our number 4 out of this flight, which is from Bull Rush. And Carrie Ann's going to give us background on this one.
Yeah, Bull Rush was a late entry into the flight, but it is from Piedmont, South Carolina. As Craig mentioned, hub of gin making in the U.S. So Bull Rush is a vernacular term for cattail. If everybody knows what a cattail is.
I see what they did.
So Bull Rush is made in a traditional pot still with 24 pounds of botanicals per batch. And developed to be enjoyed by gin drinkers and non-gin drinkers alike.
Seaweed's heavy.
I don't like to associate with non-gin drinkers. I'll just go ahead and say it. Right there. Don't trust them. Never will.
No. Marsh grass is heavy as well, apparently. So.
Marsh grass. So this gin is juniper forward, I would say, and has a handful of nothing totally out of the ordinary. As far as the botanicals go, I think the lavender you can definitely pull through.
I agree.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice little gin.
In fact, that's what I wrote in my. It's botanical is on the definitely on the finish, and I actually wrote down something lavender or something sweet, you know, that is very botanical forward on the back end of this.
And this one is 44%, so 88 proof.
And that's a pretty obvious one too. I would say that the if there wasn't the salt. The floral qualities would bother me. And I think what this is, it's pretty well balanced in that, you know, something that bothers me about New World gins in general is overly floral without.
Yeah, I think they've got to try too hard, you know. I mean, it's not balanced. It's kind of like, look what we found in the botanical closet. We're going to dump it all in and vapor fuse it.
It's like buying.
Oh, we have some products that were in this flight that literally had like 30 different botanicals. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Now we know where Bath & Body Works is sending all their
They send them all to Monkey 47.
Yes. We're closing our stores, but guess what?
I like that, Craig. That's pretty good. Because that's exactly what I think every time I have Monkey 47.
Monkey 47 is the worst gin on the planet.
It is. I don't understand why people like that so much. Because everybody's like, well, what's the most expensive gin you have? And I go, it's the most expensive, but it's definitely not the best.
Same reason that people buy Pappy.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
It's the same reason.
Banned in Kentucky.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. I'm feeling
it. Well, it was a good show. Yeah. And I'd just like to thank all of you guys. It's good run.
It was nice for you being here, Craig. I appreciate that. You just stepped on, blew your left.
This will not be the first thing I say that pisses people off, trust me.
Just you wait.
Well, some of my own tasting notes. In addition to that, you know, kind of, you know, botanical back end. It was kind of sweet up front. There was kind of a peppery thing, you know, kind of in the middle of this that was going on. But I really thought that it was very well balanced. And, you know, I was really surprised it didn't taste like, you know, a Me Too, you know, gin that was in this flight.
It doesn't taste abused?
No.
Harassed?
No, it didn't.
Oh, gosh.
Well, the one thing I found on a lot of the other gins, I wrote abrasive probably about 18 times a day. It felt like, you know,
this is a gin that will work really well with a sweet or Amaro.
Ooh.
Mm. Cool, man.
Because
I agree. That is a great choice. I'm sorry, Julianne is not here to vehemently agree with you.
I wouldn't go, you know, I'm not talking for that. I'm talking like the Chinars and the Maletti's and the Ramazzotti's, where you'd have enough of that salt to cut through it. I think a good viscous vermouth as well, but I wouldn't go with a light Dolan vermouth with this one if I'm doing cocktails. Just my opinion.
Great in this flight. Any other tasting comments about this before we rate this and move on?
I'm looking forward to playing with it. This is my first taste of it.
I agree. This will fit in nice with a lot of cocktails that will be on another episode. Our SIPs rating here for Bull Rush Gin is going to be a 3.
Interesting.
Well, up next is the curveball that I threw in the flight. I put a gin that was in our Big Gin Taste-Off and hit our top 3 back into our flight that we went through today. Just wanted to see, you know, it's been 3 years, you know, since we did the Big Gin Taste-Off. I wondered, has our palate changed?
Has it been that long?
Maybe 2 years. Yeah.
I think I still have PTSD from that.
So our number 3 gin is Kenobi from Kyoto Distillery. And this was a fabulous gin and what hit our top 5. And we've rated it very well today as well. And the fact that, you know, some of the same palates are here and some of the, you know, Craig's palate was kind of new to this. Is this a gin you've had before, Kenobi?
It is not, and I've actually never had a rice-based gin.
Yeah, and that was what was really fascinating is that there is a soft, you know, quality, you know, about this that you would typically find in a lot of rice-based, you know, distilled products. But the herbal blend off this was just fantastic, and I loved it.
Well, the funny thing is the first thing I have is not grain.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't know what it was, but it's the first thing I was not grain, super mild on the nose, restrained juniper.
Yeah.
But I noticed that it was rounder than most of them, which made me deduce that it was not grain.
Yeah, it was the first thing on our tasting lineup, and I usually start at the beginning and work my way down. So this was the first thing that kind of balanced, and I really enjoyed it. And I always try to like come back later and revisit the first couple again just to see if I'm in the same place by the end of the flight. I had on my notes that it was a little bit sweet at the beginning. I didn't get the rice thing, but I did say that there was almost like a Maltese quality to it, something like that. And then obviously the floral notes at the end, but it was a great place to start. But you always got to keep messing with this, Mike.
No, and when you welcome. go back now after Yum. You know, whatever, 3 hours of nothing in my mouth, it's much more evident that it's rice. It's like sake. I mean, you can actually, and I maybe that's subliminal, but I don't think it is.
That's not a bad way of describing it. I can definitely see some sakes that would fit, you know, a bit of the taste profile for this.
I would love to do a cocktail with sake and this.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Mm. It's kind of sweet in the middle, which I actually like, and it's very, I think the juniper is actually the star of the show, you know, for this.
Yeah, that was definitely my first, well, it was the first thing I tasted, so I always go back as well. Tasting gin is really different than like tasting through the similar number of whiskeys, because there's so much
It's intense.
Variation
yeah.
in what you're tasting, and that you're not tasting apples to apples.
Yeah.
So it's a very different tasting.
Different, you know, different botanicals, different way in which, you know, it's been augmented or adulterated or however you want to call it, whatever, you know, flavoring, you know.
Gin is a female, whiskey is a male.
Well, I'm so glad that we came back around for this. Our SIPs rating for Kenobi is also a 4.
That's classified.
So we're moving right along here to our next gin, which is actually has it's number 3. That's the name of it. This is from Hoatling. Let me get the background on that in front of me.
Numbers here. Are super hard just today.
As fast as I can.
Number 3 is number 2, but it was number 7.
Gin.
Yeah. All right, number 3. It took Barry Brothers and Rudd, London's oldest wine and spirit merchant established in 1698, and a team of spirit specialists 730 days to painstakingly refine and create the world's best gin. All right, so first off.
732 days, they could have been number 1.
Yeah. You know,
they just tried a little bit harder.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, what? Slacker.
Also,
you know. What'll be funny is that, you know, when they hear what was number 1 in our flight, is, you know, they'll send a note off to these guys and go, dude, we did this in 4.5 days. You know, it's like,
but also like 730 days. Why didn't they just say 2 years? Like, no, each one of those days was so important.
Or, you know, like how many milk bars were involved, you know, in the painstaking, you know, process of refining, you know, and creating this gin. I mean, what would you do in 730 days creating a gin? I have no idea. No. The BBC has such horrible programming. There's no way that you could just sit around and watch TV for 730 days.
Right, but it's a Dutch collaboration, right? So for those 731 That's days, you're pretty racist. You might smoke some weed. Yeah, you throw that in with the English, you know.
That's the thing that I really want to know is I want to know what you did during those 730
the diary
days.
Of the
talk about how much money you're going to make off Americans by selling your gin.
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's every time somebody's checking on with you during the research, you know, process, and go, yeah, we're going to get on that, man. Yep, we're right on that. Hang on a second.
Yeah. It is Europe, after all. There's no pressing deadlines in the Netherlands. Yes.
They did have to weigh 6 different botanicals, precisely.
Yes. I mean,
precisely.
Well, I mean,
do you think they use the same scales?
That probably took like 187 days all by itself, you know? How much
I mean, it's the metric system,
is it,
guys.
Yeah,
this is all, yeah.
Is that 42 grams or 42 and a half grams, you know? I mean, you know, seriously, I have no idea what you would do for 730 days. I've never done anything for 730 days. So.
Well, it's getting pretty close to being at home.
I was going
to
say, the time of COVID is truly, you
feels
know,
like 732
let's
days.
Just try now.
Yeah,
because right, we can cram it into a month.
Right.
Well, so we should have started to make gin.
So we have bathtubs.
Wasted time.
Oh, man. So they weighed these 6 botanicals out that I'm going to tell you about here in just a second. Then they added it to the still and steeped it for 16 hours.
That's half a day.
Ultra pure grain spirit. The next day, the distillation begins. It's a 7-hour cook. The master distiller.
Third of a day.
The master distiller collects the heart of the distillate, and then we triple check the drin, twice. Oh,
that's where those 700 days
that's
come in.
That's what's going on. It's 703 days. What number are you on a checking? I'm on number 2. This is day number 5. Okay, so to ensure that nothing short of spectacular. I'm pretty sure that that's what they said after they left out of the right milk bar. Spectacular milk. Then they bring their gin down to a precise 46% ABV, the perfect ABV for our unique taste, and it's ready to be bottled. So here's a list of the botanicals in this and the origin of where they're from. Grapefruit peel from Uruguay, orange peel from Spain, coriander from Bulgaria, cardamom from Guatemala, juniper berries from Italy, angelica root from Poland. Hmm. So I think it's, I noticed several of these where they were sourcing, you know, different things from, and I thought it was very interesting, such a wide variety. If I had to take a guess, where were they blowing the 730 days? It's that they went through like 40 countries from grapefruit peel,
yeah.
You know, and they were like, no, I think the grapefruit peel works good from Mexico.
Yeah, we're getting closer, guys. We just need to go on a couple more field survey right, trips, yeah. And I think we're going to figure it out.
Yeah, Tony from Bulrush sent me like where their all of their botanicals
were.
So they were Bulgaria, Indonesia, China, South Carolina, India.
What did they source from South Carolina?
Well,
marsh grass.
Racism.
Yeah, that's right. Oh my God.
Marsh grass with a
Thank
touch
you,
of racism.
I appreciate that.
Banned once again.
There we go. Now we're banned from there.
I'm sorry.
It's so quick. South it's so Carolina. Bad.
Dudes who seem gay but aren't. That's the other thing that comes from South
Carolina. Even worse.
Centric is what we call them.
But that linen suit, though, seriously, it helps everything.
I don't know about you guys, but
it ties the room together.
Multinational gin botanicals are where it's at in this lineup, obviously.
I mean, for this gin number 3, not the number, but the actual brand of gin number 3, I smelled the, or I thought I smelled the Jennifer. The universe smell.
Oh, interesting.
I guessed, that's the only one I guessed right. The one I said, oh, it smells like Jennifer. It smells like unsweetened
Jennifer. The malty.
Yeah.
I smelled the Guatemalan children that picked the cardamom.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but the suffering is nature's tenderizer, so I really feel that just kind of makes it.
And Guatemalan children are delicious.
I did have a tasting note of this one being soft, so it could be the little soft hands of the little babies.
Well, it's the tears as they wash each little berry. It's just
a little bit.
Gin tears. Wow, we are awful people.
Yeah, moving along. Really moved away from the milk bar fast. My own tasting notes here, I wrote a lot of pepper up front. It's very well balanced. Very dry finish, I thought, off of this one. Now, I will tell you that I've had a lot more time, you know, to play with these gins, both neat and in a lot of cocktails. I have gone back to that number 3 an awful lot, and it has worked very well in a wide range of things. Is it the low rider?
It is.
It's extensive testing. That's what we call it in the business.
To me, this is beef eater. If bowls made beef eater.
Oh, that's an interesting call.
That's a good way of describing it. I like that a lot, Craig.
So I could use this for anything. I could literally use it for anything. It could be good in a martini. It could be good in a shake and drink.
I have not seen this product as widely available as some of the other ones that we've gone through. And I'm hoping that Hodling will take this to heart and expand distribution and get this, you know, in a much broader range, because it is fabulous. I really love this.
Number 2.
Correct. That is right.
Oh, boy.
If you had to pick a cocktail choice to go with this, anything come to mind?
I wouldn't do a lot with it. I would be happy with a little tonic.
Well,
just call it a day.
What you were talking about is the way it kind of keys into more of a Jennifer kind of piece. You know, I would think about some things that I would normally make with Jennifer, or maybe like Old Tom or something like that, and kind of see where it would go from there.
I wouldn't use anything heavy with this because I think the gin. This is a gin I'd use when I want an ounce and a half or more gin in my drink.
Like, when you want the gin to
when
sing.
When you want the gin to sing a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think with a Martinez or stuff, I think you'd lose it. I think you need to back off. I'm trying to think of, you know.
I think the vermouth would absolutely.
An aviation, perhaps?
Yeah. There you go. I can see that working.
But I think it's pretty versatile because it's got that bite that I like.
I just wouldn't want the lavender to the creme de violet to really kind of compete with the sweetness in this. That would be the only thing.
I use such a small amount of violet in
there. There you go. Yeah. Less is more. Yeah. Whatever your recipe says, cut it in half.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Just want to see the color.
Love this gin, everybody. And so our rating here for number two from Hotling is going to be a Sips rating of 4. Fabulous gin. Very distinctive bottle. You'll see it on the shelf. So definitely seek that one out.
It has a key on it, but no castle.
Oh, man.
Oh, there's a tip off.
I hope we have some time.
Well, let's see. We're going to get to our top pick here before our second break. So our number one in our flight here is actually going to be from Freeland.
Yay!
Yeah, how about that? I mean, that is says an awful lot. I have some background here about Freeland as well, while everybody's grabbing their glass.
I think it's fair to say that Freeland kind of is one of the reasons we decided to do our next gin show.
But we have to be pretty specific here. This is the Freeland Dry.
Yes. Let's see. Yes, that is
which
true.
Which is very different than the other Freeland. Yes. The other Freeland is not good. This Freeland Dry is very good.
Yep. So I have some quick background here, and then we'll get to our break. Freeland Spirits Dry Gin is London Dry styled, distilled in Portland, Oregon. For all of you rebels defying the odds and breaking through the glass ceilings, we created Navy Strength Gin because strong gals deserve strong gin.
Hell yeah.
I like that. That works for me for sure.
Put hair on your chest.
The aromatics are concentrated and bold, tickling the senses with hints of spice, citrus peel, and ever-present juniper berry. Our women-owned and operated distillery offers the best of the Pacific Northwest in every sip. This is actually stacked out at 114 proof. Wow. That is probably the most kicked-up gin we've had.
I didn't have to brush my teeth today because of this. It just washed it all away.
No more COVID in our mouth either.
Right. Yeah. Hey, we'll be right back talking a little bit more about Freeland. It's not just the destination, but baby, the whole elation riding down this lover's avenue. As slow as a willow blows, or as fast as the whirlwind grows, we glide beneath the stars in cobalt blue. Look to the left, to the right, keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love. Our eyes ahead on these back roads with a view. Hey, welcome back to Sip, Suds, and Smokes. On today's episode, we are going over a flight of gin that we have made out of 13 different choices, and we're going through our top five, and we were just discussing our number one gin out of this flight, which was from Freeland. It was the dry gin. I was giving a little bit of background on this, very standard, approach towards the Navy Strength London Dry Gin, which, there's been a lot of people that have aimed for that. In fact, we're going to talk about one that hit the bottom. That was aiming for that right after this discussion. So let's talk about this a bit more. First off, we're huge fans of Molly.
Yes.
And
can't say we aren't.
We really have to be transparent that, we just have a huge crush with her skill and her ability of creating great products. And Carrie Ann reminded me, part of what led us to actually do this episode was this was a gin that was created after the Big Gin Taste Off, and I really thought there was a great story, and I really wanted to hopefully share this gin with the world and put them on the map because it's really good. And not only do they have two different versions of it, and we didn't talk about the second version of their gin, just the dry, but they have another version that's a bit more botanical forward. They actually have a ready-to-drink version as well.
Mm. Oh,
that
cool.
is really amazing. And I hope that as their distribution expands, that you'll have an opportunity to get this. You're talking a little bit about their neighbors across the street.
So Aria Gin is another gin that didn't, did they make our last gin tasting?
Yes.
They weren't distributed. So
yeah,
we,
Aria
yeah.
was in that.
We were looking at who's distributed enough so that everybody could kind of find the gins that we really loved. So Aria is a gin that most of us at this table do really love. And these guys are neighbors, and one of them produced for the other their gin in the time that they were building the distillery. I'm pretty sure it was Aria that was helping out Freeland. I might have that backwards, but I think so. So those guys are friends, and they're making very different gins, but both very good. So Portland could be the actual seat of awesome gin in America.
Yeah, except they're lazy, so it'll never happen. It's the lazy city in America.
I can tell you, those ladies
it's the dream of the 90s,
at Freeland.
Are you inhaling with your right hand or your left hand when you're saying that? So,
not lazy over there. They are working their
no
butt
the city.
Off.
I don't know Molly at all, and Ryan's not lazy either. So,
well, shout out.
I think what I really love about our process today was Carrie Ann and I knew this gin. Already, we were already in love with it, but we hit it in this blind tasting, and I love the fact that even through doing it in a blind, that this wound up being on top, and it says an awful lot.
Yeah,
with some really great palates.
I'll tell you what I wrote down, and this is a huge compliment for someone I don't know who they are. It's Heyman's Royal Dock with a little bit of floral quality.
Okay.
Wow,
and to me,
that's high praise.
Heyman's Royal Dock is easily in my top 10 favorite.
I agree.
Now, what I actually say I really like about this dry is that I knew right away it was Royal's, Navy Strength. It was obvious. Hmm. I want that in so many different types of drinks.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there's some in art that we tried today, but there are dozens and dozens and dozens of gin companies now who just underperform because of the lack of alcohol.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Gin's made for cocktails. Yeah, it's got to stand up. Right, and when they just fall apart, it's kind of like, what are you even doing?
Well, and I think a lot of times new upstart, I was talking about this in the break, was that a lot of times new upstart distilleries, you know, the easiest thing in the world is to buy some distillate or, you know, make vodka or gin. And then they throw a bath bomb in it and then just kind of see what happens from there. And there's no balance. There's nothing that...
I think we're going to talk about a gin that has a similar process.
Oh,
here.
Boy. But this is, to me, my notes were just, you know, just so perfumey, floral, but at the same time, very dry and just such a clean finish. And you're right, with that Navy Strength proof, this could really stand up to a lot of things you could throw at it and still
and
sing.
And look, it's not nearly as floral as something like an Uncle Val's, which is garbage. And the reason it's garbage is because it's underproofed.
Wait just a second.
There was a touch of sarcasm, as he said.
If I want to drink my grandmother's purse, I will order Uncle Val's.
Wow, that's interesting.
And well, that Uncle, sounded way weirder than I meant it.
No,
I meant a legitimate purse.
I think Uncle Val had some fun weekend activities that we didn't know about. But
some of my own tasting notes here for Freeland Dry. It started out kind of sweet. There's a floral thing that kind of creeps in early in the taste profile. Juniper and rosemary is what I wrote down. We're kind of in the middle and the kind of the forward herbal component around this. Sweet finish, but squeaky clean. I love this.
Super clean.
Yeah, I love going back to it even now here in the glass. It's really amazing.
Good job, whoever made it. Molly, is their name?
Molly.
Good job.
Yep.
And I'm a terrible, terrible pain in the butt. So.
Yeah, really great organization. And so they actually make a whiskey as well as that ready-to-drink product. And I hope that we'll have an opportunity of featuring both the ready-to-drink and the whiskey on a future episode as well.
What, I'm sorry, what do you mean by that?
Ready-to-drink is like a pre-formulated canned cocktail.
Yeah.
That's why I don't know what that is.
No, there's some really great...
Rosé gin? What was it? What was the ready-to-drink?
Rosé and
gin and
tonic.
Yeah.
So it's a full-proof gin in a can?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Sure is. Like, no corners cut.
Gotcha.
There's some really great quality products on the market. I mean, it used to be, you know, terrifying malt beverages and,
well,
you know, corn syrup, right?
I just got another package from Portland of an RTD. a couple days ago. Oh, so wow. RTDs are coming.
They are a big thing now.
They are.
It's a huge growth piece.
We have some future episodes planned covering RTDs. And I think that, you know, hopefully some of the ones we've mentioned here will make that discussion. But in the meantime, you know, these are really great, you know, products you can work with.
I just hope that if we ever see them in a bar, we walk out.
I just hope that people start drinking them and put the seltzers away.
I actually
have a real cocktail in a can. Yeah.
That's fine. I just, if I see it in a bar, I'm walking out, and I expect all of you to do the same thing.
I actually know some bars that is their big plan, is that they are going this route.
Well, then it's not a bar.
No, and I'll tell you what I've heard from the industry is that it's people who don't invest the training in their people. Yeah. They don't trust them to manage properly.
I wouldn't go in there anyway.
So it's all about how many drinks.
It's probably not places you'd find yourself. I think that places that are doing high volume tourism. Business all over the country, college places, they'll be like, here, have this. Tourist districts,
you know, where you want a beverage to go and you want it in a safe container
on the beach or something like that.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but you know, you're not going to walk in the Patterson house and get.
I think this would be a great time for Craig to tell us about what he does.
Well, let's rate this real quick.
After that.
So our sips rating here for the Freeland Dry is going to be a
100.
That's classified. Let's talk about Peninsula a bit. I am such a huge fan of your gin and tonic menu. Thank you. It is the one reason. So of all the places I can go to for my birthday, a lot of fabulous places, I went to your place for my birthday.
Yes, you did. That's where we met.
Yep. And what a fabulous evening. I loved every single one of the dishes that was put in front of me. I could have just sat there with a cocktail menu for a good 2 hours. It was that good.
Are you saying you didn't?
It was a good hour and a half. I probably had six different cocktails. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Right. That seems like 10 years ago.
Remember when we had birthdays?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was awesome.
So I own Peninsula Restaurant. It's Spanish Portuguese influenced, hence the gin and tonic menu. Literally everything on my cocktail menu and the gin and tonic menu and my wines are specifically to go with my chef's food. I've been in the business 35 years, started in restaurants when I was 14 years old. I just gave away my age.
You already know we're not good at math.
Yeah. If you drink the right gin, you actually age. That's true.
So, everything to me, gin and tonics changed for me when I first went to Spain or when I first went to Europe. I think it was an afterthought in this country until, you know, man, it's still an afterthought recently. In most places.
Yeah.
So I started making my own tonic a decade ago. Finally, I'm bottling it. I never understood as a younger bartender why anyone would drink tonic, because to me it was like a sugar bomb. And then I started doing some research on Kina products pre Coke Americana. How do you get these bitter, you know, Cinchona flavors without actually using Cinchona?
Yeah.
So I made my own tonic syrup years ago, really because a friend of mine and I did a 7 nights in a row, and we did every drink in the Savoy cocktail book at different bars.
Oh, cool.
Which was incredibly ambitious because the measurements, they'll say like 3 hookers of gin, and you're like, they're mouthfuls of gin? I don't know what that means. Like, there's so many different measurements. And then there's the Kina kept coming up, and this is a long time ago. This is early 2000s, late 90s.
Oh, man.
Where there wasn't anything. I made my own Kina syrup, which then eventually became my own tonic. So I actually used the Kina syrup in cocktails for a long time. And then I really started doing research on how much sugar was in tonic. And I was like, wow, even Fever Tree has
a lot,
as much sugar as in a can of Coke.
And that's, yeah, that was something that we noticed. We actually went through a series of gins, all using Fever Tree. And I definitely was paying attention to the variation, you know, of how much sugar was in various tonic, you know. And I was like, wow, there's like a huge disparity.
And I really don't understand it because, well, I mean, it's just my palate. I understand that, but Schweppes is not American. I mean, we know the English, they have worse palates than anyone.
But if I think that there's anybody that adulterated that concept of what tonic actually tastes like, I would blame Schweppes. Because they wanted to use it as a Brix.
Right, yeah. Right. And also, I mean, also, you know, to be fair, if you start playing around with cinchona bark and you start making it's really bitter. So you have to, and it's also toxic.
Yes.
So
there's that.
You have I paid to attention careful. To that during you, that seminar, Tales right. of the Cocktail. What can kill you?
Right.
That cinchona bark can, so.
I mean, it would be an awful lot, but still, yeah. But no, I'm still astounded by tonics now, even the more successful ones that are just so syrupy and sugary.
Did you know that there was a, I guess with the hydroxychloroquine thing, there was, I'm not even kidding, there was literally-
Can we put that in gin?
There was a rush on tonic water because people thought that quinine was like, so there was a short period of time during the pandemic where people went on a huge rush on tonic water. I know it's super sad, but
What's amazing to me is that someone was smart enough to put that together.
You know, it was probably some terrifying conspiracy.
I twisted the memo up because when I heard the thing that would cure COVID, I just ran towards gin.
Yeah. So, right. Well, they also said malaria. So exactly. Yeah, right.
Bam, bam. So that was...
You know, I thought that I could clean myself from the inside out, you know?
We're drunk, we'll throw a bleach, and we won't get COVID.
Well, speaking of some really bad ideas, let's talk about the thing that was at the bottom of our flight. Oh, and some interesting stories, you know, God kind of bless. About this. So... The thing that was in the bottom of our flight was actually the London Dry Gin from Castle and Key. And I have a quick description of this, which explains a little bit about what's going on. Our restoration gin begins with our rye whiskey base that is distilled into vodka. And the vodka distillate is then infused with juniper and a thoughtful selection of seven herbs and botanicals. The result is not good. It's distinct, complex, and heavily aromatic flavor profile. Their mash bill is 17% yellow corn, 63% rye, 20% malted barley.
And 5% hatred.
And I actually think that's, you know, where things really kind of go off the rail. And so this is an interesting story because we were right... Carrie Ann and I were right there with Marianne, and she was actually finishing off, you know, the very first gin batch. It was actually made in a pot still, and they actually didn't even have the column still, you know, even operational. And it was interesting that she was going after one. We knew that she was going to go after a cleared, you know, spirit, so that get some cash flowing. And gin was at the forefront, but. Man, she...
I mean, she has a really pretty garden.
Yes, it's a pretty garden.
If your mission statement disqualifies you as London Dry Gin before you even get to tell us that it's a London Dry Gin, then you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're doing. And that is so evident with this gin. It's someone who does not know what they're doing. And I'm sorry, but before when... What's her name?
Marianne Barnes.
When she came and visited me, I told her, it ain't gin.
And I said the same thing.
It ain't gin.
Since some of the early batches, you know, that she had made. And I just, you know, pulled her aside and I said, this is not London Dry Gin. It's not even good gin. And
bathtub.
And I'm hey. Like.
No, the closest thing on the market that is St. George Dry
Rye. Could you go pick up a pint of Beefeater and kind of realign yourself towards,
Beefeater.
You know, something? So I will say that the difference between what was tasted pre-release and batch one, which I tasted, there was a marketable improvement. This was batch 12 that we had, and it still moved along.
Still not.
It's good. Terrible.
Better.
It's
terrible. But it is still not.
My tasting note is poop.
Make it into sanitizer and stop
not even the cute
trying
emoji.
To sell it to us. Stop not. Trying to sell it to us.
I think the sanitizer thing would work really well because you get the nice herbal, you know, it's pretty much like, you know, a Young Living store.
It's not even high enough proof to be sanitized.
Well, there's a lot of great gin on the market. And hopefully you'll pick some of the ones we talked about today or go back and revisit our big gin taste off. Still some really great products that you should go back and visit as well. Maybe if you get that Castle and Key as a Christmas gift, pick it for your favorite uncle.
You can re-gift that.
Here you go, Aunt Harriet.
Put it with some Schweppes. You'll never know the difference.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that'll be good. Just don't take it to Craig's restaurant. He'll just kick that to the curb pretty quick. Well, we really hope you had a great time on this episode today discussing these gins. You can catch us online anytime. Do yourself a favor and tap the subscribe button.
it in. Just tap it in. Give it a little tappy. Tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
That's the easiest way to listen to our show, as well as asking Siri, Alexa, Google, or Uncle Larry, play podcast, Sip, Suds, and Smokes. We love your feedback, and you can reach us online anytime at info@sipsudsandsmokes.com. Our daily tasting notes flow out on Twitter every day. Our handle is @sipsudsmokes, and our Facebook page is always buzzing with lots of news. You'll be able to interact with the thousands of other fans on those social media platforms as well.
Your gin sucks.
It's like a cesspool of hate mail sometimes on our social media. But anyway, do us a favor and take the time to rate this episode. If you're listening to us online, that's a great big help to us, and we get to see your feedback as well. 5 stars, please. I want to thank our host for being here, good old gal Carrie Ann. Tell us a little bit about everything you got going with Straight Up 615, Bourbon Steward, and Whiskey Wash.
Wow. I had a lot going on before
the accident.
March killed us. And then, so Straight Up 615 is, according to VinePair, Instagram account you should be following. Hint, hint. And I'm also starting a monthly column with Whiskey Wash. After the first one, we'll see if he lets me keep going.
Are you
going
to give me some editorial, elements to it?
No one gets that.
Thanks for being here, good old boy Sparky.
It's great to be here and actually seeing the sunlight again.
Oh, well, whatever Jen made that happen, I'm glad. It wasn't a milk bar.
No. We shan't speak of the milk bar.
We'll work on your Welsh as well. Jeez. Good old boy Craig, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Come to Peninsula, we're back open.
Hey, this is good old boy Mike. Come back, and I'll ask you to keep on sipping.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip, Suds, and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the good old boys, will see y'all next time.